Off the Ball Rugby.
With a lot of success, everyone's going to be a lot more critical. I completely understand it, and that comes with being successful. But if we actually track the impact that Leo has had in his time as head coach, I don't think there's another coach out there that matches it or even comes close.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
You're very welcome back to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. I can let you know that Portugal are now 4-0 up against Uzbekistan, 74 minutes on the clock. It looked like an Uzbek own goal to put the Portuguese 4 up. We have Eve Conroy joining us in studio for the News Round. Eve, how are you doing?
I'm good. That was a lovely tribute to
it. It was lovely. I was completely in the zone with it, that I saw João Felix attempting a back heel close to goal, but it did look like it did eventually come off the Uzbek goalkeeper after a defender, so it looks like the goalkeeper has been credited or discredited with the own goal, as it were.
Yeah, it was an own goal in the end, unfortunately for Portugal. Well, fortunately for Portugal, they get a goal either way.
But yeah, it didn't look like Ronaldo was anywhere near that one, so he hasn't necessarily been robbed of his hat-trick, but he is still on the pitch looking for that third goal. This just becomes a head-to-head between himself, Messi and Haaland and Mbappe for kind of an early boost up the Golden Boot rankings. You've got to feel sorry at this stage for Harry Kane, who's got himself a tough group. He's got to play Croatia and Ghana in order to get himself into the picture.
I'm no expert now, but I watched that Ghana-Panama game and I said there's goals there.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they if he keeps his wits about him, they weren't. I'm sure Ghana will be better than Panama, but yeah, there's room there. He's got 3 before against Panama, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so 2018, sorry.
Yeah, so there's form.
You seem to be framing this as a real positive earlier on, this sort of the Superstar World Cup that we're having. If we were to frame it the other way, are we just in danger of this being an overly hubristic World Cup where like everybody talks about football watching these days being focused around individuals and superstars as opposed to teams? Like this just kicks, you know, football society further down that path, doesn't it? Where like, you're not really paying attention to Argentina, you're paying attention to what Messi's doing, you're not really paying attention to Norway, you're just paying attention to Erling Haaland. This is Team Ronaldo, for example, that we're watching against Uzbekistan now.
Has it not ever been thus? Like, it's rare you have, most teams don't have, if you have, like, say, that sort of transcendent level star that the kind of we're talking about there, most teams don't have more than one of them. And I suppose just the nature of transcendence, like, would be that it overcomes all around it. I think it has been that way, though. Like, it's even when people look back at the 2006 World Cup, say, it's all now viewed through the lens of Zidane. Now, maybe that's a retrospective thing, but I do feel at the time it was his last tournament, his last game was going to be whatever their knockout game was. People look back famously at the quarterfinal, I think it was, against Brazil, and his performance that day and everything else, and then obviously the final. So I don't know if that's too new a scenario. From my perspective, why I like it is just because it's the biggest stage, obviously, and you just kind of, I always like something about seeing those players who turn up and deliver on that. I think there's something compelling about it because it's kind of been, it's almost like, and for Messi, hugely in the last one, it's like the, it's the embodiment of a life's work, you know? Like imagine Messi had he won in 2022 or not, like any right-thinking person was never going to be critical of his career. Like, loads of people don't win World Cups, but to do it, it has the possibility to elevate you, I think, beyond a level that most can ever even contemplate reaching. So I think when you see the best players doing that, it's a validation, I think, personally.
Yeah, maybe it just speaks to, again, my own pessimism on this whole thing, that like you've expanded the World Cup and now all of a sudden the whole point of the expanded World Cup is that some of the best players in the world can pad their statistics against weaker nations. Okay. Like, I mean, you talk about the four superstars there that are in the race for this Golden Boot. If it's going to be one of the superstars between Messi, Ronaldo, Mbappe and Haaland, like 36% of their goals have come against Iraq.
Yeah. I get you. Okay, yeah, I get you from that point. There'll be a degree of maybe it's slightly it's slightly fudged. But I suppose my hope is that it's a sign of what's to come later in the tournament, that you have games when they come up against one another and it's kind of all the best that they're going toe-to-toe. I do get you. Yeah, it'd be a pretty hollow experience if it kind of tapers off. But there's just something about it. I mean, I suppose you watch... When you start watching football, I presume you were initially... There was something latching you in, or there was you kind of knew individuals before you knew teams. You knew the names of teams. Like as a child or whatever, you don't really know how a team works in that way, but you know the players and you kind of latch on to who's... Like for me, when I was 7 in World Cup 98, like everyone knew about Ronaldo, but I couldn't have told you. Like I didn't, you know, but that's the lingering thought from that World Cup. I do think there are people that just... I think that's a common enough thing. I do. I don't think that's anything too new.
Yeah, and look, I mean, his being Messi's first kind of real World Cup, like in 2010. I know he played in 2006, but 2010 is the first one where he's like expected to do something.
Yeah.
I guess you kind of were left wanting more when he comes away from that tournament with just one goal. So I'm much more satisfied as a Messi fan seeing what he's done in the last two World Cups. And yeah, even though, you know, the goalkeeper for Algeria and Zidane's son didn't exactly put in a masterclass in that first game, there was something quite nice about Messi scoring those three goals. So I don't know, it's just something that's come into my mind tonight watching this. It just becomes very sort of hold my beer and watch me pound an underdog, really, in terms of what Ronaldo's trying to do to Uzbekistan tonight. But yeah, that's the situation there. One thing that we saw on social media, Fletch is commentating for Fox, and apparently he had actually done the Cristiano Ronaldo sue in his commentary this evening. We weren't sure if this was true or not, and then we dug out the audio.
Relief, aggression, delight, sue! Oh. CR7 lights up Houston, he's off and running in the 2020s.
Oh, no.
That was awful.
Eve, do you want to take us through what's actually happening in the world of sport today? You are going to be starting with matters between Portugal and Uzbekistan.
Yes, so as you previously just said, it's 4-0 between Portugal and Uzbekistan in the first of tonight's World Cup action. Ronaldo scored the opener for Portugal 6 minutes in, and Nuno Mendes doubled their lead 10 minutes after that. Ronaldo then got his second of the evening and Portugal's third shortly before halftime. And then, yes, on the hour mark, Uzbekistan scored an own goal, making it 4-0 to Portugal.
You might round us up on everything that's happened in the last 20 hours or so in the World Cup.
Yep, so plenty of drama in the overnight games. Last night, Kylian Mbappe scored twice for France in their victory over Iraq. And with 4 goals so far in this tournament, he sits second in the Golden Boot race, one behind Lionel Messi. Third in the race then is Erling Haaland, who also scored 2 goals for Norway last night as they defeated Senegal 3-2. And Haaland's fellow Norway striker Alexander Sørloth says the country's lucky to have him.
His strength is to be hungry. I think that's his main strength. He's never satisfied. He wants the next goal and the next goal. And yeah, he has a mentality that's one of the best in the world, if you ask me. And he's never tired of scoring goals.
We have England back in action this evening.
We do. So the later fixture this evening sees England face Ghana in Boston. That game kicks off at 9 p.m. England can qualify for the last 32 with the victory tonight. But Ghana's captain Jordan Ayew says his country is ready for the challenge.
It's going to be a tough game. We all know that it's going to be a tough game, and that's why we had the World Cup, because we play against the best. And we're ready for the challenge, and we're going to do our best to make ourselves proud and to make our country and our family proud.
The England team for tonight is Jordan Pickford in goal, to back four of Reece James, Ezri Konsa, Mark Guay and Jed Spence, Elliot Anderson and Declan Rice in midfield. And Nani Medweke starts on the right, Anthony Gordon on the left, Jude Bellingham in the 10 behind Harry Kane. Thomas Partey starts for Ghana tonight. Jordan Ayew, who you've just heard from, is starting. Antoine Semenyo is starting. As you've touched on already there, Arthur, you're not entirely convinced that Ghana can put it up against England, but what do you make of that England team?
Strong. It is strong. It'll be very interesting. From what I kind of gather, and maybe Ben will know, he'll correct me in this, but it does seem a lot of those theoretically stronger teams have sort of played a lot better in round two. Even I think Netherlands, Portugal here, France, I think were better last night. Maybe the opposition, whatever, notwithstanding. Spain, certainly. But England, I suppose, are one of the few who really started off well. So, geez, I think they'll keep the momentum going. I think they could go through Ghana for a shortcut here tonight. Like, again, just like based off, if it's anything, maybe Ghana up their game after the Panama thing, and I don't know the dynamics of their camp with the Partey thing as well, but if England get a run at them at all, like, they could go to town on them.
We have some club news then regarding Ipswich.
We do. So Ipswich have appointed Gary O'Neill as their new manager on a three-year deal. The former Wolves boss arrives from French side Strasbourg, where he was in charge for only 6 months. O'Neill replaces Kieran McKenna, who stepped back from management for family reasons.
No one could argue that Kieran did incredible things for the football club. It's been an incredible run the club's been on. Fantastic journey. Now the focus has to be the next step of that and how we stabilise as a Premier League club. And that's why I'm here. I have experience in that. I've done it before.
And now then, closer to home, we have Women's FAI Cup fixture details.
We do. So on Saturday, July 4th, Bohemians will face either Drogheda or Kerry at home, while Sligo Rovers travel to Waterford. Both games kick off at 3 p.m. At 4 p.m, Shelburne will host Bray or Balorgan, while at 5 p.m, Athlone Town will begin their cup defence away to Peamount, with Galway United hosting Treaty United at the same time. Then at 6 p.m, it's Wexford at home against Shamrock Rovers. And then on Sunday, July 5th, Cork City welcome DLR Waves, Turner's Cross at 2 p.m. while the Whitehall Rangers or Douglas Hall versus St. Pat's or Dundalk fixture is yet to be confirmed.
What is this golf news? Explain the changes here.
It's a bit mad. So golf's PGA Tour will feature promotion and relegation from 2028 after the creation of a two-tier series. The top-level competition will be known as the PGA Tour Championship Series and feature the leading players going head-to-head, while the Challenger Series will be the primary pathway to the Championship Series, offering players a chance to advance to the top of the sport.
I'm a little bit confused as to what's actually going on here. So is this all season long? Is it a series of match play competitions that make up the Championship Series, or how does this actually manifest itself over the course of the season, do we know?
I suppose the Super League version of the PGA Championship, where you just have over a series of I think it is all year round. I'll have to get back to you on that. But players I've spoken to so far seem to be in favour. Rory McIlroy, at least, is in favour of it. It'd be interesting to see how it kind of does in its first year anyway. I mean, the PGA not really competing against LIV anymore. That seems to be dying a death, but needing to revamp their series.
Okay, be interesting to see how this plays out. It's going to be 15 regular season events in addition to the Players' Championship and the four majors. So it's going to be a reimagined full season, including some form of match play at the end of it all. And depending on the year, the President's Cup or Ryder Cup could play a part in it as well. So promotion, relegation, not quite sure how that's going to go down to a US sports market, but the finality and the drama that's going to come at the end of the season is probably going to appeal to a lot of people. Where do you want to go next?
We'll go to Phil Healy, who has announced her retirement from athletics. The Cork native won 17 national senior titles and previously held the Irish 100 and 200 metre sprint records. She represented Team Ireland at the Olympics twice, narrowly missing out on a bronze medal in the 400 metre relay at the 24 Paris Games. And then that same year, she also won a European Championship silver in that category alongside Sophie Becker, Rashida Adeleke and Charlene Maudsley.
Okay, we have a squad announced for this big AFL clash.
We do. So head coach Colin O'Riordan has named a 25-player Ireland squad for the Australian Football League Women's Clash against Australia in August. Among the selection are Vicky Wall, Sinead Goldrick, Aisling Maloney, Sarah Rowe and Orla O'Dwyer. The game will be played as an AFL match rather than an international rules clash. It'll be played on the 1st of August in the 16,000 capacity North Sydney Oval.
Were you a big AFL man? AFL, the cross series?
The international rules?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, I mean, big fan. Nostalgically. Also, to be honest, in the contemporary sense, I'd be a big fan as well. And the sooner the men's version comes back, the better for the men's game. This is obviously quite different. This is actually AFL. Yeah. But the compromise rules, I think, need to make a bit of a return. It was just kind of cool seeing like Dear McConnelly and Michael Murphy playing together. And just seeing all these superstars on the same team together was just a pretty cool sensation. And I think the sooner it comes back, the better. Portugal. Now, 5-0 up at this stage. They have really gone to town on Uzbekistan. It's Rafael Leao with the fifth goal for them as Kushinov has his his chin pressed down to his chest, looking dejectedly at the turf as Portugal bully one of the lower-ranked teams in this World Cup. So, game over here. Uzbekistan, by the way, did have a goal ruled out early in the game, which would have gone down as possibly goal of the tournament. It was rightly ruled out, as I mentioned. It was Ganiev, which would have made it 2-1. But other than that, Uzbekistan haven't really troubled Portugal in any capacity. So it's going to be all 3 points for the Portuguese here after their draw with DR Congo in the first round. Just a couple of other stories to wrap tonight's news round up on. Eve, desperately sad news coming out of Galway GAA.
Yeah, so Galway GAA have paid tribute to All-Ireland senior football-winning player Paul Clancy following his death at the age of 49. He lifted the Sam Maguire title with the Tribesmen in 1998 and 2001. Following his retirement, he held the role of chairman at his club Moycullen, during which the club won 2 Galway senior football titles and 1 provincial title.
Yeah, really shocking news there, and we wish his family all the best. Just very, very sad stuff to see this. The age of 49 as well. As you've mentioned, an unbelievably young man, would have gone down as a legend automatically for what he did in 98 and 01. And for people of a certain age, they would have had great memories of watching Paul Clancy play in those two teams, the last real peak of Galway football as well. We shall finish up on the cricket, Eve.
Yeah, so the Irish women's cricketers were defeated by Sri Lanka in the T20 World Cup today. Ireland lost by 9 wickets and they remain bottom of Group 2 with 0 wins.
Okay, 89 minutes played. It is Portugal 5, Uzbekistan 0. We'll let you know what the full-time score is very shortly in that one. Of course, England playing Ghana tonight at 9 p.m. as we've spoken about. After 8 o'clock tonight, Brian O'Driscoll will be joining us to reflect on events at Leinster Rugby over the past month or so. Plenty of drama from the Leo Cullen news to the James Lowe news, and after 9 o'clock we'll be joined by Marcella Mora Iarau and Lara Sivertson as well for the football show. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. Time for the cash machine.
The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.